You are in the Warriors Huddle with V. Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, how you doing, man?
Well, Warriors lost last night, so I'm a little down because of it.
You and I both, although I'm hoping to breathe a little optimism into this entire podcast, we'll see how that goes for me. Quick admission up front, I guess we should probably put it on tape. We are recording this literally minutes away from the tip of game three, so by definition, we're going to be a little bit behind. It is what it is. We apologize up front, yeah?
Yeah, and I guess it wasn't really last night they lost, it was two nights ago, but it feels like last night.
Yeah, it does. It feels like it was just moments ago, which leads to the first question I got for you, man. After games two and three, big losses in the Memphis series, you jumped ship. I was really public about the texts that you sent me. I should have brought them now, but it was something along the lines of, I hate this f***ing team. I don't remember what it was that you said. After one loss in the finals, where do you stand, man? You off the bandwagon or are you still with us?
I'm not off the bandwagon yet. I think it probably takes two losses for me. And those two losses to Memphis, what got me off the bandwagon was the lack of energy and passion. And that wasn't the case in this last loss. They didn't play great, but I didn't see like an overall lack of enthusiasm or passion or desire to win.
So if they lose tonight but look fiery in doing it, you'll stay on the bandwagon with us?
Yeah, because if I'm going to spend my time rooting for this team and watching these games, I could be doing a lot of other things with my life. So if these guys aren't going to put forth the effort, then I'm going to jump ship real quick.
You kill me with that. You know, I think that we should be following our team regardless of what the hell they do. If my son is lazy, he's still my son. I don't care, you know, how much effort he puts into it, but I get where you're coming from. Here's what I want to do. I want to look back at games one and two. Let's do what we, or the normal path we follow. Let's not break it down game by game. Instead, let's go broader categories. Here's the categories I want. Things that we're not worried about. Seems like everyone is losing their head. There's a Chicken Little environment out there where Warrior fans are starting to get really concerned, and somehow we're starting to consider the possibility of losing this series. Then, once we've got the stuff we are not worried about out of the way, let's talk about some of the things that are, in fact, concerning us. I'll jump in, and let me start with one that I have been chomping at the bit to discuss. Matthew Dellavedova on Curry. I am not worried about Dellavedova's opportunity or ability to stop Stephen Curry, Scotty.
People are making such a big deal out of his defense in game two. Ooh, Steph had wide open looks. He had all the looks that he normally gets. He just missed them. It had nothing to do with Dellavedova.
100% agree. This is Matthew Dellavedova we're talking about. He didn't appear out of nowhere. He isn't some alien who came on Earth. He's been playing here for a while. He played at St. Mary's, which is something you and I missed a while back. He's been in the league for, you know, what, a couple of years. He has not distinguished himself in any way. He is not some master defensive player, and you hit the nail on the head. Steph missed shots. It happens. Unfortunate time for it to happen. You'd like to see him come through in the finals, but his lack of ability did not come from Dellavedova somehow draping himself all over him.
No, I've seen much better defense. I think Kyrie played better defense on him in the first game.
Let me put it this way. If the Cavs' title hopes hinge on Matthew Dellavedova's opportunity or ability to stop the MVP and the best shooter on earth, I like the Warriors' chances. Scotty, I'm not worried about this guy in any way.
No, I'm still fired up to watch Curry eventually just destroy this guy.
I mean, absolutely.
Both. Like, you know, it always takes a little bit of an adjustment when someone new guards you. Like you saw it in the Memphis series when Conley came back, and it was just different. But it's gonna work itself out. And again, I think it really came down to Steph just missing shots.
And there's a mental adjustment. Now, that is something I am a little worried about. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But I think that there's some portion of Steph not being used to playing in the finals. One of our Twitter followers, a guy, a music sports nut, let us know about this story that came out of the Indiana Star. When Reggie Miller was playing in his first finals, he had a 1-for-16 shooting night. That's when Larry Bird was coaching him. And Bird said, quote, normal for a shooter in his first finals. You know, and he's just pointing out that if you are the type of player who's putting up low percentage shots, you know, even if you are the best in the world at doing it, there's going to be a difficulty in dealing with the extra pressure that comes with the finals. That's part of the show. I am positive Curry will find it. And when he does, Matthew Dellavedova is not going to be able to do a f-ing thing to stop it, period.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're saying his name right, which is hilarious.
I'm positive. I'm not saying it right. I refuse to look it up. I give this dude zero respect, and it starts with the pronunciation of his stupid-ass name.
And I refuse to call him Deli. That just
no, my God.
Terrible.
Yeah, nope, Dellavedova. That's how I'm going with it. Here's the next thing I'm not worried about, and it fits kind of in the same broad category. The Warriors in general, man. That last game, I was at it. I went to both games one and two. And let me say right from the jump, they played terribly. Steph was gone. Mo Spates was missing dunks. Our bench was nowhere to be found. We did not look sharp in any way, shape, or form. We still only lost by two in overtime and had multiple chances to close it out in that game. I don't think the Cavs have somehow magically figured this out. I'm not terrified of Tristan Thompson or LeBron James. I think that this was more the Warriors beating themselves, and it's something that they can turn around.
I just love this concept that you're not concerned with the Warriors. That kind of is a very broad statement that it's sort of hard to even dig into that because it's so generic.
It is. Let me be a little bit more specific for you. What we have heard since game two is that somehow the Cavs have figured out how to slow down the Warriors. We've heard that this offense, this slow it down, give it to LeBron, us refusing to double, that they can actually beat us with this grinded out style. I don't think that that is true. I don't think the Cavs have found some strategy that is ultimately going to lead to us losing our place as the ultimate team in this league. And I also believe that when they play their ball, which we have not necessarily seen, the Warriors will be fine. I think that they can win this series and will.
I guess I would say something that I'm not worried about goes right in line with what you're talking about. As far as not being worried about the Warriors, and for me, it's because of the coaching staff. And I have utmost faith in Kerr and Gentry and Ron Adams to figure out whatever it is that they need to do to ignite their team, either get them playing better or make some adjustments. They've done it every series, and it's always worked out.
Right.
And I don't see any reason that in this series they won't make some adjustments as well.
I think another way to put what I just poorly phrased was that I'm not afraid of the Cavs. I do think that LeBron James is the most talented human being with the basketball, but the remainder of that team is not terrifying, man. James Jones played 23 minutes in games two. James Jones is a corpse who can still shoot a three-pointer.
Mike Miller played 6 minutes.
Mike Miller was out there before the game, and he had a LeBron James shooting shirt on, and I'm pretty sure it's because they didn't have one made for him because they thought that he wasn't going to play. He looked like somebody who was dating LeBron James in high school and was wearing his shirt to show to everyone that they had the relationship. This team is not as good as the Warriors. I think it's the Warriors have been beating themselves in game two. That's why I'm not afraid for the Warriors in general.
Yeah, this Cavs team is terrible. If there was ever a team that was going to win the championship, this would have to go down as the worst team to ever win a championship if they pull this out. If you add Kyrie and Kevin Love, okay, that's not the worst team.
Right.
But as it is composed right now, the people that they're putting out on the floor for games two and three are terrible.
No, exactly right. It matches the theme that we heard before. Superstar player versus superstar team, right? This is just LeBron. And hopefully the Warriors and Kerr and everyone else will recognize that, make what adjustments they need to, and get back to the type of game that we got used to watching them play over, 82 wins? Or how many wins do we have now?
Yeah, it's something definitely in the 80s. Yeah,
there you go. Here's another thing I'm not worried about, Draymond's offense. ESPN, a lot of other pundits have made a big deal that against this taller front court, Tristan Thompson and Timofey Mozgov. By the way, Timofey Mozgov might be the most annoying name I've ever had to say outside of Della Delova. But they're pointing out that Green can't score against this much taller front court. That's bullshit, Scotty. Last round, okay, Houston didn't have at least two towers they could throw at him. But the round before, Memphis, they sure as hell did. And in fact, they were two players who were probably far better in Zach Randolph and Marcus Gasol, and Draymond had no problem getting his offense off them. So I think that it's only a matter of time before he finds his three-point stroke. I don't think it's size that's bothering him. And in fact, I think we'll see a big game from him tonight. I guess over 15 points for Draymond.
I am absolutely worried about Draymond's offense. To me, this guy has completely disappeared and on the offensive end, and it worries me because he seems like the type of guy who gets into a long-term slump. I'm not sure when the last time was that he made a three. I can't recall. His drives into the lane when he gets the ball from Steph on a pick and roll are terrible. He's throwing lob passes that are going out of bounds. He has no floater. He has no ability to pull up for a free throw line jumper. I really, really, really hope that Steve Kerr puts in David Lee because I think he'd be doing a much better job on offense than Draymond.
What the f*** are you talking about? Let's begin with he seems like the type of player who could be in a prolonged slump. When the hell has Draymond ever been in a prolonged slump?
He's definitely been a pro. His whole second half of this season was a prolonged slump
what
on offense.
What the hell are you talking about?
His
right
3-point
now?
Shooting has been going down, 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 down.
The percentages may have gone down. I sure as hell would not say that he's been in a slump. He has been a huge offensive force for us throughout the playoffs, for example. He had huge games against Houston. He had huge games against Memphis. We could look up stats, I guess, and perhaps we should bring it to a halt and do that right now. All right, what I did is went back through just the Houston series. Here's my point totals. Game 5, Draymond only had 9. Game 4, he had 21. Game 3, he had 17. Game 2, he had 12. Game 1, he had 13. So with the exception of one game, all been double-digit points, and in games 3 and 4, both 17 and 21. So his offense hasn't been terrible. What are you talking about?
Those are just points. We don't know if those come from the free throw line, if those were three-point shots that were open, contested. I need to know a lot more than just his point totals in one series against Houston. I mean, for instance, he has missed every single shot outside the restricted zone in this NBA Finals. Every single one of them.
Okay. I think that we're arguing about whether or not he's been in a slump and whether or not he can contribute offensively, and you're telling me the points he has scored in the previous series don't help you realize that?
They're one factor, certainly, but the idea that you reading me point totals from Houston is determinative of Draymond Green, whether or not he's in a slump.
How he's been scoring in the playoffs and what he did in the previous series is not determinative of that?
No, I want to know how good he is in offense. If that 21 points came on 60 shots, then I'd say Draymond Green is slumping.
Okay, so I think we can probably both agree that it didn't come on 60 shots. He has been contributing offensively. Maybe this is a point you and I will not agree on, but my point being is that he's been able to score. His inability to score in this series does not bother me, and I certainly don't think it's been created by the size problems because he's been able to score in other series. I should have looked up Memphis because that's a better contributor, but this one took too long as is.
I don't think that it's necessarily a size thing either. I never said that. I just think that he is completely out of sync and looks scared and timid out there when he gets the ball from Curry and has a 4-on-3 situation. I think David Lee is way better in that 4-on-3 situation.
I could not disagree more. I think that if there's anyone on this roster who does not look intimidated, it is Draymond Green. I do think he's been missing shots, which sucks.
And
but
throwing
I think
alley-oops out of bounds? Two of them?
I think he will absolutely ultimately find his stride, which is apparently where you and I disagree. And the concept of letting David Lee have his minutes is laughable. I don't even think you believe that. Maybe Lee should get more time. But the concept of subbing Lee in now instead of Draymond, that's crazy.
I'm not saying that he should start. No, I'm just saying, let's give him some minutes and let him work that pick and roll. He's so good in that 4-on-3 situation. He is a better, I think, passer. I think he is better at pulling up and taking the foul line jump shot.
I don't remember far enough back to tell you how good David Lee is anymore. What I'd like to know is how many shots he's missed out of the protected area. That'll give me a perfect sense of where he is offensively. I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on this. The last thing that doesn't completely concern me about this, at least about games 1 and 2, and it was a point I made a lot of times over the season, is the Warriors' inexperience. I was really worried about their ability to step up towards the finals with Draymond's lack of scoring and Steph's inconsistency as an understanding. I still don't think that their inexperience is going to hurt them, and this is why. Cleveland doesn't have any experience. The only person in that arena who has any experience at all is LeBron James.
That's not true.
The rest of them, who else on that team is playing
James
the finals?
James Jones, Sean Marion, Kendrick Perkins.
People who still have pulses and will actually make a difference
Mike
on
Miller.
The team. I think all of those guys, we've got Steve Kerr, we've got Gentry who's been to a finals. We've got people who will play the same actual role on the floor as any of the people that you just mentioned.
No, I think it's pretty invaluable to have veterans who can really actually talk to the players about what this experience is going to be like. So I think that it is an issue for the Warriors, but at this point, it's just basketball. Like, they've gotten the game 1 and 2 out of their systems. I think from now on, it's really just they're going to play basketball, and there's no finals jitter anymore.
Now, is other things that you're not concerned about?
No, we covered those things. There are definitely some things that concern me.
Fire it off.
Well, one is an interesting adjustment that the Cavs have made to put Mozgov on Iguodala at times, sort of pulling the
Tony Allen
Bogut situation. And I think, Iguodala can definitely shoot way better than Tony Allen. It's just a matter of whether or not it's going to get in Iguodala's head. If he makes one or two early, I think, you know, at that point, he probably won't be continued to be guarded by Mozgov. But it was an interesting adjustment.
He almost won. Iguodala almost won game one for us, not only defensively, but offensively. I don't think that you're off base, though. Timothy Mozgov, just generally speaking, concerns me. He is much better than I remember. And the Warriors have already beaten him in a playoff series. He was on Denver when they beat him a couple years back. But he has either really grown personally, or we're seeing what LeBron James can do if you're playing on the same team. But either way, that guy is not too goddamn bad. And he had 17-11 in game two and only played in the first half.
I know, it was weird that he disappeared. I don't know. I didn't understand that coaching perspective because he was killing it.
Here's something that really worries me, and it's kind of twofold. One, LeBron James is remarkably good at basketball. If anybody can take a team that otherwise does not belong in the finals and have them actually win one, it is him. We've seen this kind of hero ball before. The first example that pops up for me is Allen Iverson in Philadelphia, where someone was just great, and then they got to the finals, and you realized, okay, he's brought them as far as they're going to get. It is what it is. You know, they're not going to get over this next step. LeBron looks like he just might be good enough to at least come close to taking that next step.
But boy, is it ugly basketball.
Yeah,
it is not fun to watch. That was the thing that made me most sad when Kyrie went out, was now is going to be stuck with even more LeBron James iso ball. Yeah. I really loved watching Irving play.
Sure.
I thought he had crazy handles, and I hadn't watched much Cleveland, so it was kind of fun to see him. And watching LeBron just dribble, dribble, dribble.
Suck the life out of the shot clock, suck the life out of the game, and then ultimately put up a shot. The second part to that two-headed point is that this team is well constructed. You know, they're not real deep. They're not real talented, especially after they lost Love and Irving. But everyone who is out on the floor plays a very specific role, and they're also very good at that specific role. There's also no quit in them. You know, I mean, this team, I think the Warriors may have thought after Kyrie went down, they could cakewalk their way to a championship. I did, as a fan. And after watching that game, too, I've already told you that I'm not concerned, but I'm also positive it's not going to be given to them. They're going to have to fight for everything they get in this series.
Well, they've constructed a team that's totally okay with standing around, watching LeBron do that, but then have guys who are dedicated to then pounding the offensive boards. And that's been... I've been really impressed by their ability to get offensive rebounds in this series.
Me too. Hey, would you double LeBron?
I would double LeBron. Absolutely. Just get it out of his hands. Just, I mean, the same thing they're doing to Curry, where it's just like, I don't care. We just can't have the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'd like to do. Now, he's pretty incredible passing out of the double team.
Yep.
I mean, some amazing just putting the ball right in the pocket of the shooter. But I do it because it picks up the pace. It gets everyone scrambling and ultimately, I think, allows the Warriors to get into their rhythm.
This is, I'm sure, another oversimplification. I'm sure that Kerr and Ron Adams have spent a lot of time figuring out exactly why they want to go single coverage, you know, and they've held them to, 30% shooting, so in a sense it's working. But as a fan, if it came down to watching Della Delova or Iman Shumpert take a semi-contested three versus, LeBron James going one-on-one against Iguodala, I will take the first of those every single time. Double them. If someone's going to beat us, let it be somebody else. I'm so tired of watching LeBron get layups or slightly contested five-footers whenever the hell he wants them.
Yeah, well, one thing that concerns me to go on to maybe a next concern is the fact that J.R. Smith still has not had his breakout game.
Yep.
And we know that he's going to have some game where he hits 8 three-pointers and just rips your heart out, and that hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
And maybe it comes when they start doubling LeBron and J.R. Smith just goes
wide
nuts.
Open and gets a couple, gets the rhythm going, and then we get screwed. That's a fairly good call. Here's another thing I'm worried about. I think that Andrew Bogut might be dying of natural causes. I don't know what's happening. He's not getting any real minutes towards the end of the game. When he is playing, it's only defense. He's got no look towards the offensive end. I mean, maybe it's just the end of an exceptionally long season, but his physical ability is starting to concern me a lot. Man,
it's tough because he used to be awesome in that pick and roll situation with Curry.
Yeah.
And now it's like if he rolls to the rim one time, that's pretty much he's done after that.
I don't think I've ever seen him with a facial expression that doesn't scream I'm hurt. It looks like he's constantly walking through a terrible fart. He has like a look on his face like, oh my God. And I as someone who's terrified of him getting hurt, I wish he'd stop looking hurt constantly.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good call. He always looks like he's in some type of pain.
Yeah, hell yes. What do you think? So give me predictions. When we talked to Steinmetz last week, we got his guess, not prediction. I have no idea what the difference is between those two. But you and I didn't get a chance to throw down our own. Let's start with the game. Tonight, game 3, the game that's being played as we speak. What's your prediction?
I think that the Warriors, I think they win game three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think this is a five-game series.
Really? So you think the Warriors finish, they win the next three and win five? Damn. Yep. Well, you really haven't jumped off the bandwagon. Good for you, Scotty. I think that the Warriors will win tonight. I think that they're going to have a bad loss in game four, and then I think they ultimately close it out in six games, which was going to be my initial guess anyway. So I'm feeling fairly good about this series. Let me give you one last thing that I'm not worried about for as long as I'm saying that the Warriors are going to win the championship. If and when they do win the championship, I am not worried about an asterisk. We've talked about, does it feel bad to play against a team that's hurt? Since Kyrie went down, social media, Twitter specifically, has just been on fire with, if the Warriors win, there's going to be an asterisk to it. I've gotten tons of text messages from hater friends asking whether or not I'm upset if the Warriors win, but the asterisk is going to be attached. I am not in any way, shape, or form. I said it before. If the Cavs came out and forfeited today, I would be crazy happy. I do not care that they're playing against a hurt team. And I also think that it is completely disingenuous to be talking about an asterisk. Warriors didn't win the lottery and get an opportunity to be playing in the finals. They didn't get lucky and have this opportunity to take advantage of Kyrie Irving's injury. What they did was that they put up a historic win total, marched through the playoffs, and gave themselves an opportunity to take advantage of this injury. And I don't think that they should be... anything should be held against this amazing season just because Kyrie's knee went down.
Yeah, unless some team has cheated, I don't think there should ever be an asterisk on a championship. It is a hard thing to do. I don't care who is out there on the floor. You're playing against a team of NBA players. It's difficult to win a series.
Well, and this run specifically, Steph was the first guy to go through every member of the All-NBA team, right? It's almost like a video game. The power forward of the All-NBA team with Anthony Davis, Steph beat him in the first round. The center of the All-NBA team was Marc Gasol. Steph beat him in the second round. The shooting guard of the All-NBA team was James Harden. Steph beat him last round. The small forward of the All-NBA team is LeBron James. They win at this. He'll beat him this round, and the point guard of the All-NBA team is Steph Curry. So he literally will have made his way all the way through what has been determined to be the best players at every single position in this league. So save the asterisks. I'm not worried about it, and I don't feel like talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I hope you are fired up to talk about our next subject, because here is, you know, you're kind of bearing the lead, I think.
Good transition there. Whatever this is, I like that.
I mean, you went to two NBA Finals games after... not having gone to a single playoff game, which I know must have been killing you.
Oh, yeah.
Now you actually scored tickets to both games of the NBA Finals. I mean, tell me about, what is it like? I mean, I'm here at home just watching on TV.
Surreal, unbelievable. I almost sold my soul. I came hell of close to selling both games because the secondary market prices got so goddamn high that I at least had to consider it, Scotty. Thankfully, I kept them in pocket. You know what I mean? I went to the games, but I'd be lying to you to tell you that I didn't at least consider it.
I mean, what about, in my mind, one of my favorite parts to any game, and I imagine it's only magnified by 1,000, is the starting lineups, the introductions. Yeah. You have all the game to look forward to, the anticipation. It's like that Friday afternoon.
Yep.
I mean, are the Warriors bringing it in the intros?
So the Warriors crowd was unbelievable in both games, although there was a real distinct difference between Game 1 and Game 2. Game 1 had a surreal feel. And also, let me say, just going to the Coliseum, I'm going to the Coliseum, man, for 20 years at least. Seeing the finals there is like running into a friend who's lost 20 pounds, kicked a drug habit, and is now crazy successful. Like, I recognize the place, but now it's all glitz and glamour, and was really weird seeing them there.
Are there NBA final logo stuff up? Like, do you know you're there for the finals?
There's a huge fake trophy out front that people are taking pictures of and waiting in line to take pictures. I love Warrior fans, but waiting in line to take that picture didn't necessarily make sense to me. The words final are plastered everywhere. Although, you know what wasn't there? This pissed me off a little bit.
On the court. It's not on the court.
Where the hell is the decal on the court? I had to look it up. Apparently, it was too slippery, which was a problem. Now,
I really missed that logo on the court. I mean, that was something I was looking forward to.
You and me both, but getting back to the crowd's reaction, I get there, we're drinking a little bit out front. I see a Cavs fan get out of the car and get booed every step from his car all the way until he got in line at the Oracle. I've never seen that before.
Were there a lot of Cavs fans?
No. There was maybe, 0.1%. But another thing that stuck out for me during that game one, the top right rafters, literally all the way to the top, so that if you were sitting there, you could reach up and touch the ceiling, was all Cavs fans. And every now and again, they would come out and try to make noise, whatever it is, let's go Cavs or some organized cheer. Every time they did that, Oracle reacted in a way that I have never seen. So a little backdrop. I've been in Oracle when Kobe got the MVP chants. I've been in other stadiums where the other fans come in there and they, you know, they chant and you can hear them and they shut up the home crowd. Feels like someone kicking in your door and stealing your beer. You know, it's almost like a demasculating moment. When the Cavs fans tried to jump out in game one, every time they made a noise, the entire arena erupted and went crazy. They went with the big Warriors chant, and it was so gratifying to finally see that. It was kind of like a collective, not here, not now, not with this team, which was just awesome.
Just completely drowned them out.
Completely drowned them out. And to finally make our way all the way back to your question, the intros were amazing. And I actually grabbed sound, man. Here is Oracle exploding for when they finally and first announced Steph Curry. The other thing that
Before you leave that, though, tell me if this is true, because we just heard the audio there. When they make the Steph Curry announcement, he has actually already left the bench and is, like, already in the huddle, which makes me so mad. Someone along the way started this tradition where the star, who everyone's waiting to see introduced, always goes out with the guy who was called right before him.
Yeah, it's Klay Thompson. He follows Klay. When Klay walks down, Steph follows immediately after him.
Why? If you're the star, I'm just enjoying that moment. I'm really taking my time walking through that line. Like, it kind of does a disservice to the fans who want to see him introduced.
Have you ever been self-deprecating to somebody? Like, tell a joke about yourself because you know that they love you and that they completely respect you, and they will hear that joke almost as you patting yourself on the back. You know, like, they'll laugh, but they know that you're actually not whatever trait it is you're joking about. It almost feels like that for Steph. Like, he knows this is my building. He knows everyone's here to see me. I'm going to leave a little bit early. I'm too cool to get the big cheers and still kind of seem like the big shot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just wish that he would enjoy it more and go out when his name's called. I think that's the proper way to do it. But tons of stars don't do that.
Yeah, fair enough. The other big difference being at the games, ton of celebrities, man. Tons of celebrities. At that game one, Magic was there. It looked to be a guest of Lacob. Jesse Jackson was there. Rihanna was there. Marshawn Lynch, who got booed, which kind of upset me, was there. Your boy Mayweather was there.
My boy.
a couple of just quick takes. One, Magic Johnson is a social genius. From what I can tell, a sociopath. Everyone who passed and said hello, he had his own little personal relationship with, his own special handshake with. It seemed like any athlete was there, he knew, had a relationship with, and knew how to really press it,
Yeah, that's a Magic man.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The other one is Mayweather. They had a camera that was going down and showing all the celebrities at the game. The last time they showed Mayweather was at that Western Conference Finals. He got booed. They decided not to put his ass up on the big screen this time, which I was really, really entertained by.
Do you think Mayweather had requested that, or do you think that was the Warriors' choice?
I think it was the Warriors' choice. I also think that I might be able to last a round against Mayweather. He's like 1'8". I feel phone is like 2 inches taller than Mayweather.
You're not lasting around with Mayweather. Get out of here, dude.
We'll never know. I think I might be able to.
That's terrible. What about... What about I heard some good things about the Warriors kiss cam during these games. I like how they've taken up the kiss cam another notch by showing, I think it's sponsored by some like chili pepper company. And so they'll now rate the kiss. Like, is this a little spicy, medium spicy, hot, hot, hot?
I am so happy to not have a kiss cam take about the finals. I hate the kiss cam so much. I refuse to even acknowledge it's happening in any way, shape, or form. So I have no kiss cam take for you, man. I'm sorry.
Growing up and going to Wizards games, that was really the highlight of any any game was the kiss cam. So
that and how many shots people missed out of the protected area, undoubtedly. You know, the other thing that's worth mentioning, man, game two had a totally different feel. And it comes out after Kyrie got hurt. It almost felt like attending a wedding where the two people who were getting married had previously been married and they met each other when they were still in that other relationship. Like, everyone kind of felt like we're there to celebrate, but you felt weird about celebrating, you know, because of the Kyrie injury. So it was almost like a muted feel. I mean, right from the jump, I mean, it's not that people weren't cheering, and maybe I'm just projecting, I'll keep it personal, but it was that there was no upside to it. You know, it was that we were expected to win. So either you were going to meet expectations or you were going to be remarkably disappointed. There wasn't going to be any real celebration. Does that make sense?
So do you feel like people kind of felt bad about celebrating because it was at the expense of a superstar's injury?
I think it's because they were expected to win. Have you ever played in a pickup game that ended up being co-ed and the girl guards you? You know, and it's just a lose-lose. You know, if she plays really well against you, you look like an asshole. If you beat her, you look like an asshole. You know, there's no upside to it. It almost felt like that. Like, the Warriors were expected to win that game. They were expected to run away with it. And I felt like the fans came in with hesitancy because of that.
A little lack of focus.
It did, yeah, and it stretched all the way through. And I, you know, now that the shoe's on the other foot, now that apparently, you know, LeBron and his team are considered the favorites because they've won one game, we can throw that out the window. But it was absolutely present, man. I mean, did you feel that at watching on TV? Did any of that translate?
You know, it's really hard to tell on TV. You can't. I did not get that sense. Yeah. I really didn't. It's the microphones. They just don't pick up the crowd in the sure. same way as being there. Now, seeing as how I have watched both these games on TV, did not have the privilege to go to them, I will bring up, and this was an interesting thing that I wanted your take on as somebody who loves Oakland. There's been a lot of talk on whether or not the national media is using the word Oakland or San Francisco and showing shots of Oakland versus San Francisco yeah. during these broadcasts. After game one, there was a organization called Visit Oakland who tallied up the number of images.
My boy worked for them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, then maybe he did this study where, I guess, during the broadcast, they showed 11 Oakland images. Five of those were of Oracle Arena, so just a blimp shot.
Yeah, which doesn't count.
Yeah, yeah. It could have been yeah. any
so
random
six.
Stadium.
Let's call that six.
And then six were of the non-Oracle area, which included a shot of the Port of Oakland, Jack London Square, and one of Lake Merritt from behind the Grand Lake Theater marquee,
okay.
which was an interesting shot. There were two cutaway images to San Francisco.
Good
and then
word, marquee, by the way. Grand Lake Theater is just a movie theater, but incidentally, go ahead.
Yeah, well, they showed that it was from the,
okay,
behind
the marquee.
The marquee.
All right.
And then two others were of the Bay Bridge, so kind of neutral.
All right, where are we going with this question?
So are you? Does it bother you that they're not showing more images of Oakland, or do you think 11 out of...
absolutely bothers
good.
Me. Doesn't surprise me. That has been true for as long as Warriors games have been televised. At least they're actually showing occasional shots of Oakland. What they used to do is say Oakland, California. You know, TNT, when they had the big games, they would show where the location was and then some big tourist location to associate with it. You know, if it's in Chicago, they show that giant bean thing. They used to show, they'd say Oakland, California, and then they show the Golden Gate Bridge. Every single time. You know, so none of this surprises me, continues to piss me off, but from what I can tell, there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, you got to go support your boys at Visit Oakland and give them props for getting this story out to the national news and putting pressure on the media to be, you know, giving credit to Oakland on
this. I'm
going to
call my boy and tell him to stop using the phrase marquee. The rest of that, I'll just support by him actually compiling these numbers. You know, it is what it is. The problem is that they're moving to San Francisco, so it's difficult for me to really get too angry because the team itself has apparently decided that they want to be associated with San Francisco and not Oakland. All right. Huge fun, you guys. We really appreciate you listening. That's true every week, certainly true this week. Please remember, if you want to reach out to us, we can be hit up on our email, which is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account remains at warriorshuddle. If you want to check out our website, it's warriorsworld.net. We're still on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes. Please get out there and rate us. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, you guys. See you next week.
You want a show? The real season begins. Compete and defend, defeat and ascend. Don't sleep, we ain't here to pretend. We're here to the end. The wins, Splash brothers and twins. Thin, kin with a grin, but warriors within. Two prodigal sons with the will to ascend. The step is in his range when he step in the gym. He going 10 for 10 and he ain't at the rim. And Clay is too long to contest and contend.
Good.